Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how you doing today?
Three things, Chris. I have just discovered that I've become painfully middle class. Number one this morning, I ordered a John le Carré book on the Waitrose app. Number two, I went to the shops for some oat milk, and then number three, I've just dropped my AirPods in a on my avocado on toast. So for those three reasons, and those three reasons alone, I would like to disassociate myself from my working class Hartlepudlian roots and apologise to everyone who I ever made think that I was in any way a bit of rough.
But most importantly, is the avocado still edible?
Well, that's the problem, though, isn't it? The AirPod, like, your AirPods go everywhere. It's like your mobile phone. There's probably more disease on your AirPods than anything. And I'm not even boasting that I've got AirPods, but I do need them for my work. So up yours, they're tax deductible, yeah? So there you go.
Oat milk, though. I had it for the first time recently. Mm. It's all right.
It's manageable, isn't it?
It's manageable. It just tastes like milk that's gone the wrong direction. Soy milk kind of works. Just trying to avoid milk altogether these days. Part of my healthy lifestyle of no milk. I suppose oat milk's healthy though, right?
Yeah, I guess it's healthy. I don't think it's very good for the environment. So can't bloody win, can you? You can't bloody win. But the problem is you've got to shake it up before you drink it. And so when you pour it into the cup of tea or cup of coffee, it's like quite, it's all fluffy.
Pulpy.
it's all fluffy and pulpy.
Fluffy, pulpy oat milk for your middle-class lifestyle.
Yep.
And you've moved to the country as well. You really are turning into a middle-class rascal, aren't you?
I know. It's awful. I mean, it's awful. I've become everything that I hate about myself. I've got to make sure what the right recycling goes out. at the right time. It's very depressing.
That's bleak. But at least, Pete, really definitely watched the brand new Abroad in Japan video about owning a sushi restaurant, right? You watched it, right?
Sorry, mate. I'm just at. I'm a car on tour, so I can't talk right now.
You didn't watch it, did you?
I didn't watch it, Chris, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't watch your sushi restaurant video about owning a sushi restaurant, but I'm going to watch it on my computer as soon as we finish this podcast. I promise.
You were contractually obliged, as part of the Abroad in Japan podcast, to watch and devour every episode of Abroad in Japan without question, Pete, and you have breached that contract. Too busy dropping your bloody AirPods into avocados and enjoying your oatmeal. Disgusting.
Listen, what is an obligation anyway? We don't know. We don't really know a contractual obligation. If it's an obligation, I don't have to do it, do I? Up yours, everyone, up yours.
Damn you. Time to what find was a it replacement. About, yeah, it's about owning a sushi restaurant, isn't it? It's the title says what
fair
it
dues.
Is.
Fair dues. Oh, yeah. Lovely old job.
About 5 years ago, I was at a party in Sendai, and Ryotaro dragged me along to some meet-up thing, and there was loads of business leaders and CEOs in Sendai, and I was a bit out of my depth, right? Because as you imagine, most Japanese managers are like 60, and I was like a 26-year-old guy who was like, I've got a YouTube channel. And they were like, get out. What are you doing here? You don't belong. But there was like a really nice young guy in his early 30s who had lived in Canada for a bit. He spoke English. We got on quite well. I think as he was one of the young people there as well, right? And I was like, what do you do then, Satoshi? And he was like, well, I own the biggest sushi chain in like North Japan, and I own an empire. And I was like, oh, fair enough. I just thought you were a nice, friendly guy in his 30s. But no, the CEO, president, owner of a massive sushi empire. And from that day onwards, we always joked about making a video on Abroad in Japan and just never did for like 5 years. But this year, finally, had a bit of free time. We got our schedules together. We stopped joking about it and we actually did it. And it was great. Yeah. It's you know how difficult it is to film inside places in Japan, right, Pete? And to get inside
stuff.
Well, yeah, and to get inside a sushi restaurant was fantastic, and to interview the head chef, who was really cool, spend a day with Satoshi Ueno, the owner, just hear what it's like both as an owner of a sushi restaurant and as a young CEO in Japan, because it is so unheard of. His dad, who set it up, he just sort of said, I think his dad retired at the age of in his late 50s maybe, and just sort of said, look, while I'm still young and you're young, you should take over and you can be young and use your innovative thinking to run the company, which is quite a bold move. But it was good fun. I also learned, I knew it already, but when I was interviewing the head chef, which is my favorite part of the video, he just talks about what it's like to prepare sushi and how it takes like 20 years to learn it. But he revealed the one thing you must never do at a sushi restaurant. And do you know what it is, Pete? Can you guess what it is, even though you haven't seen the video?
The caterpillar, the dance move, the caterpillar. It's very disrespectful.
What is the caterpillar? Is that where you stand up and wave your arms? Oh, no, lay down the floor, right?
No, you lay on the floor and do like a little kind of like an undulation that rolls from the back to the front of your body, like a caterpillar walks effectively. And it's very disrespectful to the sushi owners, because you're basically saying that microbes and worms live in the food.
To be fair, they'd probably prefer you did that to the one thing that he didn't want me to do. right. Basically, a sushi chef doesn't like it when they hand you the sushi, right? The say you've got a bit of onigiri sushi, some salmon or tuna on top.
Yeah,
take the tuna off and then dip it in the soy sauce and sort of marinate it and smother it, and then stick it back on the rice, then eat it, because they take so much time and precision to get the balance of the rice correct, to get the right amount of wasabi, to cut the amount of sushi, to kind of marinate it gently with soy sauce. And if you remove the fish, it kind of destroys all that. It unravels it all and ruins it. And he said he hated that. So you can do the caterpillar all you want, mate, but just don't take the sushi. just don't take the fish off the rice.
Yeah. You sort of look at the way that they spend all that time doing it, and then people do just dip the whole thing in soy sauce before they've even started, because they like the soy sauce. It's akin to old people in Britain, where they'll get served some food and they'll just smash loads of salt over the top of it without even looking at it or tasting what the food tasted like before you put the salt on it, which is just crazy, really. I'd never understood that.
Just ruins it, doesn't it? All the hard work and preparation. But yeah, check it out though, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't seen it yet, do check it out. It's a good video. It's a little 20-minute documentary, and I'm really glad I was finally able to do it. The hard part though was it was filmed over 2 days, and on the second day, I had to get up at 4 a.m. to film in this fish market, right? And you know how awful I am at early mornings, Pete. Because whenever I always have to do something involving fish at 4 a.m. but like, you know, when you have to get up really early in the morning and your body's just like, no, you're not going to sleep. Ha ha ha.
No.
It did that.
No.
And I had no sleep. I had to go around a fish market, film an auction, go to the sushi restaurant, film all day, do interviews, taste the sushi. And the problem is, because I had no sleep, you can like just see how rubbish I am at reviewing and presenting this video. Like, I get the sushi that he spent like 2 hours preparing. And I go, oh, it's good, isn't it? Oh, delicious. There's like no interesting commentary from me because I've just had no sleep.
I remember when we got up really, really early. We'd had like 3 hours sleep. We'd got to sleep at about 2 and we were up at 5.
You had 3.
It was crazy.
I had like 1.
I had 3. Well, you had 1. And we went out on the boats with the seaweed fishermen. And then we came back and you were chatting to some of the seaweed fishermen at a place near Sendai with Ryotaro. And, it really made me giggle because halfway through you were like, doing like pieces to camera while Ryotaro helped film. And, you were going, Pete, what should I say this bit? And I was going, how about this? And then you went, no, because you were tired, so you couldn't think of anything to say. I was trying to give you advice, but I was so tired, I couldn't think of anything to say. And you just ended up just doing your own thing anyway. So I think I was invaluable in that video in that I was giving you terrible advice that you should never take. But I just enjoyed the fact that it was just 3 men who had no kind of sleep, apart from Ryotaro, who's probably used to getting up really early.
It was a disaster. Let's not sugarcoat it. And yet it turned out all right after all, right? It's weird. Like, even on no sleep, when you're filming a video, you get this kind of adrenaline rush. Or I guess if you're doing anything, right? If you're doing anything practical, you get this adrenaline rush and that powers you through.
Yeah.
But yeah, it turned out all right. And luckily, I'm barely in the video. It's not about me. It's about sushi and chefs and food and tuna. So check it out, guys, on the Abroad Japan channel. Owning a sushi restaurant in Japan, what is it like? Hopefully that video will clear it up for you.
Does Satoshi dream of sushi is the question.
He does
That's
not.
What I want to know.
He does not dream of sushi. Yeah. He dreams of trees. but you'll see why if you watch the video. Or I can spoil it now by telling you that he plants trees along the coastline to help the sea, which is something I didn't realize was a thing. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
His company's got this initiative where they've been planting trees along the Tohoku coastline that got buggered by the tsunami, destroyed by the tsunami. They've been planting trees because apparently most of the fish you catch and eat they're actually near the coastline, right? And if there's not enough nutrients in the soil and it doesn't go into the sea, then apparently there's less fish stocks. So I'd never really made that connection. Yeah, yeah. So he dreams of trees, which is not as good as sushi, but it's great. It's a noble aim. Wonderful.
Fantastic. Lovely.
And now we turn our attention to the story of the week. Let's kick off with a story. In the last couple of episodes, we've talked about cults recently. The topic of cults in Japan has been coming up again because it turns out most of our listeners seem to be approached by people in Japan, but we never get to the point where someone actually goes to a cult. And until now, though we've spent 2 years on and off, we've had various cult stories of people being approached by folks from like a religious cult and trying to be indoctrinated. We've never had a story, have we, where someone's actually followed through and gone to one. But we do today. Andrew from the Sunshine Coast, Australia. And it begins. Hello there, Chris and Pete. On the last show, someone emailed in about how they had declined joining some old woman to a Buddhist cult. I had a similar experience, except I didn't decline, and I followed the two women onto the train. In the winter of 2017, I was passing through Ikebukuro Station in Tokyo, and I was approached by two 30-year-old women. After exchanging a few words, they immediately sprung upon me some shifty-looking pamphlets about how their brand of Buddhism would bring about world peace and happiness. Brilliant. I was skeptical, though, and refused them a number of times, but eventually my curiosity got the better of me, and I accepted, as I wanted to see what a Japanese cult was like. The two women took me onto the train and we arrived in what can only be described as the middle of nowhere in Tokyo. They took me into their shrine, which was nothing more than an office building situated in the middle of a quiet residential area. Before we made our way into the main prayer hall, which was on the second floor of the office, they handed me a prayer book written in Japanese and some prayer beads. They explained to me the rules of the prayer book, how every time the phrase Namyo-ho-rengekyo came up, I had to repeat it three times. They also instructed me in the ways that I had to sit and hold the beads. After the explanation, they whisked me away to the front of the hall where we sat in front of a gold-plated altar. An elderly man meditated in front of the altar and began a soothing read of the Buddhist prayers. I was expected to follow along with the impassioned chants promoted by the two women, keeping a close eye on me. The process took 40 minutes and we chanted the entire 40-page book. The next part, though, is the most interesting part. The cult, it seems, is some sort of pyramid scheme. I was taken into initiation ceremony where a woman spoke to me in really fast Japanese. She then coerced me into signing a bunch of documents that officiated my membership into the club. The two women who took me there to the session received some sort of award. It seems they got promoted for bringing people to join their questionable religion. At the end of it, the two women wanted my address and contact details. They wanted to send me things related to the cult. I gave them a fake address, and after adding them on Facebook, I immediately blocked them. They were quite persistent that I should bring my friends next time I come. I said I would, waved them goodbye, and never saw them again. Overall, it was an unforgettable experience and one that I would have again when I was in Korea. But that's a story for another time. Sorry for the long email. Andrew from the Sunshine Coast in Australia. Good God. That chanting for 40 minutes. Can you imagine?
Why are all of the Australian emailers recently just people who will happily just go with the flow? We had the lad who, the big guy, who went and just got drugged deliberately, handing over a 2,000 yen note. And now this guy who's just happily, you know, risking losing his organs to a cult.
It's weird, isn't it? It's always Australians. Yeah. It's just like the second week in a row. That's interesting. I didn't realise it was some sort of pyramid scheme where they get awarded or get like a reward for bringing people in. It seems like a really quick way to grow a religion, right? You bring your friend in, put your phone number and name down. Great, remember now, bring someone else in, get an award. It's interesting. I never realised it was like that. On the upside, at least it's only a Buddhist cult, so it can't be that bad. You know, Buddhism. Can it go horribly wrong?
Well, I think you know, Christianity can go horribably wrong into wrong hands, isn't it? Pretty much every major religion's had some bad eggs, turning it to evil, towards evil, so to speak. So, yeah. Interesting though. I like the idea that you know, it is like a pyramid scheme, and you know, people get rewards either financially or through beads or otherwise for bringing people in. Fascinating.
Would you be tempted to go along if someone approached you? Would you go with the flow, so to speak?
Yeah, I'd go with it. I'm not Catholic. I've taken communion before in Catholic school. I've taken the Jesus' body and blood.
You've taken Jesus' body?
Yeah. Oh, God. So is it the transubstantiation or is it the transfiguration? I forget which one is the one where Jesus' body becomes the bread and the blood becomes the wine. I can't remember. It's one of the two, or maybe not even that. Those two. Well, maybe it's another one.
Well, all I know is Jesus ended up in Aomori, didn't he? That's the only thing I know.
He did, yeah. All I know about Jesus is Jesus is a rock and he rolls our blues away. Hey, hey, hey. Which is a song that a church group sang when they visited my school once. But they refused to keep their guitar in tune, which is very upsetting to, I think, everyone concerned.
A painful memory that's transcended time.
Yeah.
There you go. But be advised, though. Be aware, ladies and gentlemen, next time you're in Ikebukuro, it always seems to be Ikebukuro as well. We had another story the other week, didn't we, where another listener was in Ikebukuro and a politician was waving to people, trying to get votes, and the politician just punched the guy in the stomach in a sort of friendly way that went a bit too far, while it was all being filmed as well for the politician's PR reel. Always Ikebukuro. Yeah. Always
Ikebukuro.
We should go there. We should just linger around Ikebukuro Station for a day and see what happens.
Yeah.
And
magic.
God knows. Get punched by a politician or whisked away to a cult. What will happen next? Choose your own adventure.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Hi, I'm Nicole Goodman.
And I'm Lauren Mishcon.
In 2020, self-care can seem like yet another overwhelming job for women.
Every week, we test out a new kind of self-care so you don't have to.
Firstly, can we just clarify how we pronounce it?
Kombucha?
Kombucha.
Yeah.
Kombucha. Kombucha. Self-care club. Wellness road tested.
So that was the first day. You know, it was just the not slipping into the complete default mode of what I normally do, which is have a go at my husband for what he hasn't done. And, you know, all of that stuff, I kind of stopped.
Okay, so it was more the absence of meanness rather than the projection of kindness at this initial point.
Yes.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This week, we are testing out menstrual cups.
How are you feeling?
Dreading it. I know that you love to give a practice that's all about down below. I'm not interested. I've never even really thought about it since before I met you.
You've never thought about your vagina until you met me.
It doesn't get a lot of air. It doesn't get a lot of air time. No, it doesn't.
The Self-Care Club is a Stakhanov production.
Now, we've got an interesting story. This week, a Japanese survey revealed the most desirable prefecture to settle down in Japan. Now, there's 47 prefectures in Japan, right? Hmm. But which one do you think, Pete, hit the top of the list. And I must say, I'm surprised which one it was. Mm. I know which one it is, but do you? Can you guess?
I know which one it is. I don't know which one it is. Would it not be somewhere really nice and hot and beachy and lots of like nice kind of beaches and rivers and seaside towns? So I'd probably go for like somewhere in Okinawa or somewhere like that.
Well, Okinawa was ranked as number two, so close.
Oh, well, there you go. Close.
Good guess, yeah. Good guess. Number one?
Not a clue. Not a clue. Well, all right, the exact opposite, Hokkaido.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's Hokkaido.
Oh,
Hokkaido
really?
Was ranked
That's hilarious.
As the most desirable prefecture. You know that because I've written it down and I forgot to delete the word Hokkaido, don't you?
Yes, you did. Yeah, I was trying to play it. I was playing along with it. I was playing along with it, Chris. But as always, you've exposed your own administrative stupidity. So feel free to expose mine too.
God damn it! I sent the article to Pete, ladies and gentlemen, but I took the word Hokkaido out of everywhere except one line, and so he saw it, and it ruined the surprise. God damn it! This
the URL wouldn't work otherwise, would it?
Yeah, wouldn't have worked. But yes, no, Hokkaido. Weirdly. Is number one spot. I was surprised because I find Japanese people just don't like cold weather. Like they hate cold weather. And Hokkaido is absolutely freezing in winter. They didn't go into much detail as to why. I think it was to do with Hokkaido's cuisine. It's got a strong sense of culture. And in the summer, it is one of the best places in the country to visit. And maybe because they did the survey in the summer, maybe people were thinking, I wish I could go somewhere slightly cool right now. Oh, yeah, Hokkaido. But it's the second year in a row that Hokkaido's taken the first spot. But interestingly, and perhaps unsurprisingly, a lot of cities have actually dropped down quite a long way. Last year, Tokyo was the fourth most desirable place to live, right? But it fell 29 spots to 33rd place this year because of the coronavirus. People were kind of wishing they weren't living in the city now. And so it's actually kind of an upside in some respects that the virus might encourage people to reconsider living in the rural regions that have been so badly devastated in the last few decades due to the declining populations and people moving to the cities. So it could be one of the rare good things to come out of this whole disastrous situation that people choose to live in the countryside more going forward. What do you reckon?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess... certainly with the outbreak of COVID and people working from home, you would presume, thanks to the excellent internet infrastructure in Japan, much better than anywhere else in the world, you would say, people could probably work more remotely and work out in the sticks. I've been watching this guy on YouTube doing a restoring an old it's like a house that has it's basically a free house that someone has that out in the sticks. I think his house in particular is out like an hour away from like the commuter belt of Tokyo. And it's just this rancid old rotten wooden house. And he's just sort of slowly sort of piling through it and fixing it up. And he had to sort of go through the process of like obviously bidding on an auction. So he got a very affordable house, but there had to be all of these hidden fees added. And he obviously has to renovate the whole thing. And he spent so much time just fixing up this house. And he's done a lovely job, a really, really beautiful job.
It's, I know a friend who had a similar thing. It's quite common in these rural areas, right, where the population's dramatically declining. They are just giving away houses. A friend
people
of mine.
Just abandoned houses. And especially if there's debts accrued on the house as well. If you can pay off those debts, you get to keep the house.
Absolutely. It's important to point out that houses in Japan don't last that long. It's not like the UK where they're made out of bricks and they last forever. In Japan, I think the lifespan of a house is somewhere between like 30 to 40 years, maybe before it really needs some serious renovation as opposed to the UK. But, my friend got a house, an old woman. I think she was getting too old to live in the place. And she just sort of said, "Do you want my house?" And he was like, "Yeah, all right." And that was it. That's all there was
crazy.
To it. And she moved out and he got a house. Crazy. Yeah.
Wild. Absolutely.
And that was in Yamagata Prefecture, which is 40th place on the survey of 47 prefectures, which is a shame. It's a shame. You've been to Yamagata. You've seen how beautiful it is. But Yamagata's often the butt of all jokes in Japan. It's often seen as like a backwards place. I can't think. What's the UK equivalent of Yamagata? What's a place we make fun of? Or in the US, for example?
I don't know. Where's the part where people say a boot? No, that's Canada, isn't it? Probably the South, isn't it? People sort of think that like people are a little bit backwards in the South, but I've been to the South quite a lot and I completely disagree.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't think of anyone in the UK, but it's a shame. I mean, I've tried to do what I can.
Birmingham, yeah, Hartlepool, Newcastle. It's just anybody who's got a flamboyant accent, people think they're a bit backwards.
Are you a bit backwards, Pete?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I am backwards, massively backwards.
Dropping your bloody AirPods in the avocado. Of course you're backwards.
I know.
And
I
not
know,
watching
right?
Abroad in Japan. Disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. But, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame. Maybe I've got to put some more effort into promoting Yamagata, my spiritual Japanese home prefecture, going forward, given it is so low. But in terms of the top five list, though, number one was Hokkaido. Number two was Okinawa. Number three, Fukuoka. Number four, Ishikawa, which is home to Kanazawa. And number five, Osaka, which is a surprise in some respects, given it's a massive city. But Osaka still kind of has that cool aura around it, doesn't it? It's still the cool place to be. It's still the kitchen of Japan. And I would love to very much go back there, given that the last time I was there was with you, actually. That's 2 years ago.
That sounds like such a long time ago, my word.
Right. Where would you choose to live, though? On the subject of living in Japan, if you could live anywhere, where would you go?
I would probably live in Fukuoka because it's a city, but it's massive. You get a bit of the seaside if you fancy it. And also everyone's really, really lovely and the food's nice. So, Fukuoka, always warm, always nice. The people are lovely, smashing.
Super trendy. As for me, I mean, I've chosen where I live already, and that's Sendai, Miyagi Prefecture, which is 15th place, dropped down from 11th place last year. So it's had a bit of a fall from grace, but I think it's a great place to be. It's like the heart of Tohoku, given that it's the biggest city in North Japan. It's an amazing place. Fantastic stuff. But there you go. If you move to Hokkaido, if you ever end up in Hokkaido, well done, ladies and gentlemen. You will have ended up in the most popular, most desirable prefecture to settle down in all of Japan. And with that, we turn our attention to the fax machine. What do we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Dawson?
Oh, it's time for the fax machine. Monica from New York City, lovely part of the world. Hello, Monica. Hi, Pete and Chris. Thanks so much for still keeping on with the pods and the videos. That's quite all right, Monica. I imagine the videos are a lot harder work than the pods, but they are more frequent, the old pods. I wanted to respond to Lady Brittany's recent fax. Oh, yeah, Lady Brittany. I forgot Lady Brittany. One, I'm also female. Two, my mother comes from the Dominican Republic and my father is African American. Number three, during my first trip to Japan, I had two nose rings, leopard print glasses, frizzy curly hair, and I'm plus size. Needless to say, I definitely did not appear to fit in with the Japanese people around me. The only time I recall really being stared at was while I was waiting to board an elevator. And when the doors opened, another black person was on the other side. We were both caught off guard for a moment, as that was the least of what we were expecting. And we just kind of stared at each other in amazement. That's hilarious. I've been to Japan twice now, and I'm waiting for the COVID situation to ease up a bit so I can plan my third trip. I've transitioned to locks recently, so I wonder how that'll be perceived next time. So far, I've traveled solo around Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, and Nagoya. Each time I met a lot of kind and fun people, Japanese and other foreigners. If anything, I feel as though my appearance drew more people to me. It also helped that I practice a little bit of Japanese. If you plan on doing this, just be patient with yourself. It's hard. You will somehow make progress. All that said, you'll have an amazing time. There's no need to worry about straightening your hair to fit in. They'll accept you as you are. Maybe get ahead of yourself and start planning on your second and third trip, because no doubt you'll be returning again. Monica from New York City. You've brought joy to our hearts and joy to the podcast. So thank you for your message.
Absolutely. And for some context, Lady Brittany was a listener who last week came to us and asked us for our experiences on what it's like to be a black woman in Japan. And unfortunately, Pete and I haven't got much first-hand experience of that.
Did my best, mate. Did my best. You know me. I'll have a go at anything.
Oh, God. But that's an interesting insight. So actually, it was beneficial from Monica's perspective, although that was a holiday, not to work. So it would be interesting to hear from someone who has lived in Japan long term what that was like. And as I said last week, there's a great YouTuber, Kimushi-chan, Kemushi-chan. The host's name is Loretta, and she's a black woman living in Japan, and she has a really interesting perspective on life in Japan. I highly recommend checking out her channel. And we have got a message now from Chris from the Philippines. Good name, Chris. Hi, Chris and Pete. Mm. Hope you two are doing well. Lucky enough to have been in Japan early this year before things went bad. Hope you and your listeners will find my story interesting, though. Being an introvert, I haven't really had many interesting encounters with a local or a fellow tourist in Japan, except for one which I still cannot forget. I had this awkward experience on a train in Osaka. I got on and managed to secure a seat. The train got crowded, and after a few stops, a woman stood in front of me. Trying to be a gentleman, I offered my seat, but instead of taking it, she just looked at me. I immediately realized she might be thinking that I thought of her as pregnant or as an old woman and got her offended. I quickly turned away and hoped our eyes will never meet again during the trip. Is it not common in Japan for men to offer their seats to women, aside from the elderly and the pregnant women, of course? Chris from the Philippines. I guess not. No, I guess that culture doesn't really exist, right? I remember when I discovered that in Japan, men always go through the door first. I remember... When I was started teaching, I let one of my colleagues go through the door. I sort of held open the door for them. They just found it a bit awkward and weird, kind of like they didn't know what to do, because that doesn't exist in Japan. I thought that it was just because in Japan, men are viewed as being better, which kind of, to some extent, is accurate. Men run the show in many ways, unfortunately, and women get the back seat. But Ryotaro was adamant that it was because in the days of the samurai, you did that so you got in through the room first to check there was no ninja or no murderers in there,
right?
For safety reasons, which I'm not entirely sure I'm buying unless I see some written evidence of that. I just think that's just Ryotaro's excuse for not being an upstanding gentleman. What do you reckon?
Times are changing. You've got to be a little bit more cognizant and understanding of the fact that you may do something that you're brought up doing, which is certainly something that I would do. You know, men stand on the outside of the pavement as you walk down the street to protect from puddles from the cars. And, you know, you always let women and obviously children through first through a doorway. And offer women your seat. And that's something that I grew up with, but that's not something that everyone grew up with, and things are changing, and sometimes your actions can be seen as more lauded than they actually are. In this situation, this woman thought that indeed the person in question, Chris from the Philippines, was thinking that she was either old or pregnant. So it's troubling and it's worrying, but you look, just do your best, and if you can, explain yourself. I'm sorry, but I'm old and I thought that's what you're supposed to do. Bye.
I think that culture doesn't exist where people give up their chairs unless it is someone who is obviously requiring it, like someone pregnant. Like, we don't have that culture in Japan for what I've noticed.
Right. It makes it look like you've wet the chair, like offering it up.
Wet the chair.
What have you done to that chair? Why are you giving me that chair?
I remember there was an argument on a train a few years ago that was in the media. There were some young folks sitting down, small people got on the train. And they were like, aren't you going to give up your seat? And the young guy was like, no, piss off, because I've worked all day to pay for your pension because the economy's in ruin. And it was quite an interesting situation. Like the young folks were like angry because they felt they were funding the old people and paying for their pensions.
Right.
And the old people were like, young people these days are rubbish. Rah. So it created some sort of tension. But no, fundamentally, Chris, I guess that culture just isn't as common over here for whatever reason.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Sad.
Yeah.
Scott. Got one from Scott.
Scott. I will read the one from Scott then. Hi, Chris and Pete. My name is Scott. We were already aware of that piece of information, Chris and Pete. We were already aware of that information, Scott, because I read the end of the podcast email first. I'm writing to you from sunny southeast London. Big fan of the podcast. It was an invaluable resource when me and my partner were planning our trip to Japan back in 2018. We were set to return in November 2020, but I think it's a safe bet to say it's being postponed to next year. So roll on December 2021, we say. After hearing Chris's story of the spontaneous gifts he's received from strangers during his time in Japan, I want to share with you an anecdote of just such an experience I had in Nikko, which I hope you'll find amusing. After walking through Nikko, I decided to duck into a small off-license as I was on the hunt for a reasonably priced bottle of 12-year single malt Yamazaki whiskey. Alas, there was none to be found at this particular establishment. I couldn't even find a bottle at the Yamazaki distillery the day before, so I'm not sure what I was expecting. I did, however, purchase a bottle of Nikka from the barrel from the sweet elderly lady who ran the shop, so all was not lost. After bagging up the bottle for me, she held up her hands as if to say, "Wait there," and she disappeared in the back room, only to return moments later, shuffle to my side of the counter and firmly clasp in my hands. Firmly clasped my hands tightly in hers, followed by my partner's. To our surprise, when we opened our palms, we discovered that the shopkeeper had slipped us each a triangle of Dairy Lee style cheese, fortunately still in their foil. A bit confused but grateful nonetheless, we politely accepted our gifts, thanked the generous old lady, and went on our way to enjoy the cheese and whiskey back at our guest house. I was lucky enough to enjoy both slices of spreadable cheese as my partner opted instead for a can of Asahi premium malt and some crunky Herloss. Crunky, we don't talk about enough on the podcast. It is effing delicious. Now, attached here is a photo I took of this curious food and drink pairing, also accompanied by a photo of me delirious on 48 hours without sleep after just having landed in Japan. Shot being by cheap whiskey at Don Quixote in the same quantities you buy wholesale cooking oil back in the UK. Absolutely massive bottle of whiskey, plastic bottle of whiskey he's got in his hands at Don Quixote. I keep it the great way. Your twice weekly dispatches are a real treat in the old podcast feed. Scott Monaghan, thank you very much for getting involved, and thank you very much about your story of cheap cheese and expensive whiskey.
I love that. The shop staff, you got this lovely whiskey that cost an arm and a leg, and then the woman was like, "Wait a minute, just wait there, I'm going to get you something." And just comes out with some like 5 yen cheese, a little crappy 5 yen spreadable cheese. She's like, "Take this cheese, enjoy this cheese, savor it with your whiskey." Very
odd. So
quite good, that cheese, though. I had a weird addiction to it a few years ago. It's called Snow Brand, and it's formidably cheap. And you can get it in every convenience store in Japan, and you can spread it on bread, or if you're like me and you're a disgusting human being, you just eat it straight. Straight spreadable
cheese.
There's
nothing wrong with eating a Dairy Lee triangle. What I would say is, and that's a phrase I often repeat on this podcast, one time I bought what I thought I was buying was a wheel of spreadable sort of brie flavored cheese, but it was actually just butter. And so I did what you did. I opened up the foil triangle and chomped away, realizing too late that it was butter. It was bloody butter.
That is horrendous. Terrible. What was your reaction after you had the butter in your mouth?
I've eaten butter was my reaction. This is a disaster. I've eaten butter.
Oh, good God. One from Detlef. Detlef, it says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I watched your video about what it's like to own a sushi restaurant earlier today, unlike Pete. And earlier in the video, you commented on the lighting in the restaurant, which I can't help but think is coming from the filmmaker part of your brain. So my question is, have there been any locations that were a joy to film at because of the excellent lighting, or places that were a pain because of impractical aspects of the location? All the best, Detlef from NL." Was it Netherlands? What's NL stand for, Pete?
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Probably Netherlands, to be honest. Netherlands. Probably Netherlands. I don't think there's a state with NL. I'm willing to be proved wrong on that one.
Netherlands.
Lebanon.
That's definitely it. Maybe
Northern
it's Carlos
Ireland.
Gain. It's Carlos Gain.
Yes, maybe it is.
Good question. It wasn't my film maker part of my brain. I just find sushi restaurants, a good sushi restaurant is immaculately well lit. Like, they have little spotlights to highlight the food, to highlight the chef. It's very kind of ethereal and relaxing. But I've definitely had some places that were really difficult to film. Interestingly, the most difficult one this year, I'd say, was the bullet train video with Ryotaro, because I had to expose the interior of the train cabin without blowing out the windows too much, because obviously outside the train carriage it was extremely bright, but inside the carriage it was a bit dark. So that was really hard to film. Also, the same kind of thing with the driving video, with the scenes in the recent road trip driving video. The car inside the car was dark, but outside the car really bright. So I had to have loads of little lights, kind of lighting my face, hidden just outside the shop in the car, which was kind of surreal and annoying. But also, Love Hotels, really tricky place to film. The last I Love Hotel I filmed in a year ago was just pitch black and really tricky. So yeah, it's pretty hard to find good lighting when you're filming in these sort of places. But yes, good question. Good question.
Mm.
Keep the stories, questions, comments, questions, more comments and questions coming in. Lots of comments
Quebec.
And questions coming in to brawnjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days, do it all over again, ladies and gentlemen. But for now, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days, and we'll see you on Sunday. Is it Sunday, Pete?
Yeah, Sunday. It is. Well done, boy.
Don't go and drop anything. Don't go and drop any more avocados.
Don't drop any avocados on these AirPods.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.